Welcome to Vital Voices. Today, we learn the story of a downtown Asheville, North Carolina restaurant called Hemingway's Cuba. The late Tony Fraga, a Cuban exile, opened the business in 2017 with his son, Alex, our guest today. Alex, explain to me the various Cuban connections that exist at your restaurant, and particularly the relationship to El Floridita, Hemingway's hangout in Havana, Cuba.
My father from Havana, Cuba, along with his father from Havana, Cuba as well, would go to the Floridita for lunch. My grandfather was an engineer actually from Georgia Tech and had a warehouse with all kinds of machinery about, I don't know, 3 to 5 minutes away from there. And so for lunch, they would go there, and that's sort of the connection with my father. It was also Hemingway's favorite spot. And so the name came around, well, sort of a long story, Fred, but, you know, we were going to open up this restaurant that has the Western view of the Blue Ridge Mountains with the sunset. What were we going to do? What concept? What kind of venue? We went on back and forth and back. My father's a proud Cuban, refused to go back to Cuba. As it's a long story, Castro came, basically my whole family had to flee, refusing because the regime was still there to ever go back. But I had convinced him, along with my siblings, that, you know, most of the people in Cuba, besides obviously the government, they're not the reason why you're not there. They're just on survival mode. And so what had happened is convincing him for about, I don't know, almost 2 years really, that let's go to Cuba. My father has, you know, had his battles back and forth. We lost our father about a year and a half ago, but you know, he had his issues and he was on a good run right there and there. And I finally convinced him. And for me, it was for him to get some closure, you know, to go back to Cuba. And it happened, Fred, because when he finally went there, and he was so excited about seeing his old house and where the family grew up and all these memories that came back to him. And he was our tour guide. I mean, he knew exactly where to turn and where to go. And one day he takes me to lunch at Floridita. And, you know, there's a big statue of Hemingway's there and everything else. And this is before, back rewinding, before we knew what concept we were going to do in this restaurant. There was closure, but the poor guy couldn't last till 3 o'clock in the afternoon because he was an emotional wreck at the time. But the good news of all that was that, and also being, you know, I've been my dad's business partner since 2002. I worked for him since 95. But so him and I had a great relationship back and forth, throwing ideas at each other. Well, Fred, he calls me at 3 o'clock. We're back in Asheville, still wrestling around what we're going to do. Finally, I convinced him, I think we should open a Cuban restaurant. He agreed, but we couldn't come up with the name. This is months after our visit to Cuba. And he called me at 3 o'clock in the morning and starts yelling in his Cuban accent, Hemingway's Cuba. And I go, it's 3 o'clock in the morning. And I'm going, what are you talking about? the name of the restaurant. That's brilliant. I just woke up and I said, that's brilliant, because, you know, Hemingway, you know, as we all learned in the States, an incredible writer, novelist, and that would relate to, and then Hemingway, you know, basically the last decade of his life was between Cuba, Key West, and the Bahamas. And, you know, I think he got his bills in Cuba that time, which he called home. And that's where the name came from, and Floridita and all that came around. I mean, that's why you have that beautiful mural there. And so we opened up Hemingway's Cuba in December 15th of 2017. So what do we got? Almost 8 years, 7.5 years ago.
That's an amazing story.
Yeah, it's all, you know, all from the heart. You know, really, that definitely wasn't an AI kind of search, you know.
No.
Tell me about your father's exile. What had his family done in Cuba before they were forced to flee?
So my dad's family were all engineers or doctors of some sort, and so my great grandfather went to Georgia Tech, and my grandfather and great uncle, the brothers, went to Georgia Tech, and so all, you know, engineers from Georgia Tech educated here. My it's a cute story. My grandmother was in some kind of boarding school. I don't know exactly where, and somewhere in Georgia, and they actually met in a train going to Miami to get on a boat going to Cuba. So the two Cubans met in the States getting back to Cuba. And I even have, speaking about my grandfather, my uncle, my great uncle, and my great grandfather, there's a letter right here in my office as you go into my conference room, and it's called the Alphabet of Wisdom. And in Spanish, alphabetically, he gives them a bunch of different advice of the world as they're in college. And it was a great family. I mean, I do remember my grandfather, but he did die when I was very young. But I remember him very, very proud and just being a gentleman. My grandmother, my dad's side, as well, you know, just, you know, they had a life. And then there was, my father used to call it the silver spoon life until he was 17. And that silver spoon was taken away because, as you know, the revolution happened. And, you know, as my father said, you had three choices: go to jail, go to the firing squad, or leave. And, they were able to leave. My father was able to leave before going back. He actually was attending New York Military Academy High School. And one of the great stories of that is my grandfather's contacts that he had, one from Texas. He received my father and paid for the rest of my father's education in New York Military Academy. As it was a private school. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, so my grandfather was able to sort of jump on, get, you know, on his feet because of his connections. But, you know, if you think about that time, that era, 1960s early, they were 40 something years old. And, you know, starting over 40 something years old in a whole new world, you know, you're starting at ground zero. Most of my family, you know, that there were professionals of some sort, you know, these are the parents, you know, trying to survive, and they're all living in four or five families in one house. And I remember my uncle saying, you know, I remember when I landed the job of playing the Fountain Blue and valeting at the same time, I was rolling in money then, you know, where, you know, his whole life before was a whole different world, really. And, you know, my father proceeded to, so at 17, he finished high school, a very young age. At 19, he marries my mom while going to, he was working for IBM at that time. He, you know, he was a mail clerk, you know, pushing mail, and then going to school at St. John's in New York, at night, not having enough money for books, getting through class with his notes. He worked there for 10 years and, decided he was going to move to Miami after they had transferred him to Detroit, where I was born, Detroit, Michigan. He used to call IBM, "I'll be moved."
Right.
And he grabbed his wife, my mother, and four kids and moved to Miami and started a whole new life. And where he knew his family, friends, everybody grew up, you know, that's where everybody you know, was at the time, of course. And it was that kind of community. My family was always, every time it was always about, and this is what part of Hemingway's Cuba is, I want you to walk in, you're going to be floored by the music, smell the food, and have a good time. And that's what happened when my family got together. Yeah. Every time. And then even today, still today.
Sure. Do you remember what year it was they left Cuba? Was it late 50s, 1960?
So my father left on January of 1960.
Yeah, before the Bay of Pigs.
Before the Bay of Pigs, correct.
Right.
Where I have many family members who were part or involved in that, and many of my dad's friends also.
Describe the view from the terrace at Hemingway's Cuba.
So the views in the terrace, which is 4,000 square feet of outdoor space, it was strategically planned little by my father and I, not an engineer, to where that location when we built the building. The challenge was, well, do we build this building on the ground level where all the pedestrian traffic is? I mean, not the building, I'm sorry, the restaurant in the building? Or do we build a restaurant high enough where we can see all the views to the west where there's a sunset every day? Well, we decided to build it, and I think we made the right move to build it on the fourth floor of the Cambria Suites Hotel in Asheville. That wasn't a plug, I just, you know, location.
Sure.
But, and the other thing we did, and we did not have to, is such the size of it, 4,000 square feet. We had setbacks of that height, I think it was 7.5 feet. We went 40 feet. No, sorry, we went 75 feet deep. And a third of it is covered with a retractable roof. Two thirds of it is outdoor with plenty of, you know, we obviously have the umbrellas. And then during the winter, we have three fire pits. It is a place that, Fred, that I can't tell you how many times I've seen somebody have somebody get married. Families go there, weddings. I mean, you talk about selfies. That's the first place anybody wants to go to. Yep. And then we also have, you know, the decor there is, you know, all, you know, right now we have palms. You know, you think you're in Florida. The biggest compliment anybody can give me is when I hear somebody come out that door and they say, oh, my God, I feel like I'm in Miami or Florida, but with mountains behind us. And, you know, it really is something that we were so proud of, and I'm so proud of still to be part of, and my family is so proud to be part of. And I will say this, going back to the Floridita, every color in Hemingway's Cuba was stolen from Floridita. The red bar, mm-hmm. The blue, you know, banquettes, the furniture, all of it.
Wow. That, does your firm manage the Cambria?
We do.
Okay,
we
gotcha.
We manage the Cambria and Hemingway's Cuba as well. And with a partner and my late father, there were three of us own it. So now, obviously, my father passed, so mm-hmm. went to his estate.
Yeah. Now, let's go through the menu. Kind of take me through the most Cuban things on the menu and maybe how they are connected to your family.
Well, I mean, it starts, you said it before, with the black beans, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, you have the vaca frita. Sounds easy, but it's not, because the way you have to make sure it finishes is vaca frita is, you know, there's some crisp to the ends, but you still don't want to you don't want to have it come out dry. There's got to be a little juice to it in the center. And then you have a ropa vieja. These are my top seller is definitely the Cuban sandwich, but as far as my plated food is my ropa vieja, which translates into old clothes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's our version of beef stew, I guess.
Yes.
And those are our staples. Of course, you have the platanitos and you have the arroz, the congrí. It's very traditional. There's no fused this and that. Some people may say, and you know, we make our empanadas. Those are in-house. Everything there is as Cuban as you can possibly make it. Now, one thing is that we did sort of shrink the menu after the hurricane that we just went through. You know, there's been some challenges. I'm not going to lie. You know, as far as when we opened with a chef. He was here for 3 years. He moved on to open three restaurants. Obviously, you know, you're going to embrace that in another city. And we've gone through our different chefs, but we finally have a good chef now that you know, very knowledgeable in our cuisine. And you know, you might see, especially my wife, who's Colombian, She can really cook great Cuban food.
I bet she can. Now, her name is?
Claudia.
Claudia. Claudia Ramirez, is that right?
That is correct.
Yeah.
You've done some research.
Yeah, yeah. well, what I think you've done with the menu, I mean, it's traditional Cuban food, but it's beautifully presented.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah. I appreciate that.
Yeah, and croquetas de jamón, one of my favorite things.
The croquetas, those are amazing. And then what I did do a little twist there. There's a little, you have a little guayaba sauce that you can dip on, you know, sort of lined all around it. It's a little different from the typical croqueta that you're talking about, but we sure do love it. And it's just, you know, guayaba also is part of Cuban culture, you know, and cream cheese, actually, of all things.
Right.
And then if you have our, you know, if you have our, well, our empanadas and then our croquetas and then, and you know, our pastelitos too, with guayaba and queso, those are just, I mean, I could eat that all day.
Tell me about your family's Christmas traditions.
Every year I cook the pig for Nochebuena. You know, this was always on Christmas Eve.
Right.
And I cooked the pig along with my brothers, and he cooked his thing was the beans and the rice. And we put those three together, and, you know, along with some other sides that I don't even remember, because all I remember is that. And that was our tradition.
How involved are you in the daily management of the restaurant?
Where my office is a block away, and, you know, I'll go there now probably on 5:30, just say hello to everybody and grab a couple spoons and do my own little tastings and see what we might need, or maybe it's perfect. And most of, you know, 9 out of 10 times, hey, you guys got it.
Well, your father must have been incredibly proud to see this restaurant develop, and it's a real testament to him.
Thank you for that. When I say we, the family and everybody, is very, very proud. Very, very proud of that.
Our guest today on Vital Voices has been Alex Fraga, owner of Hemingway's Cuba, located on the 4th floor of the Cambria Hotel in downtown Asheville, North Carolina. For Vital Voices, I'm Fred Sossman.